Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of the Mobilecast, season 2. We're coming to you live from Denver at Bryform, and I am joined by guest host Jack Madden, who is joining me for the VMI Virtual Mobile Infrastructure Smackdown with the folks from Nubo, Remodium, and Hypori. So, Jack, just introduce yourself, say a couple words, because we've been friends for a while, and I've been on your podcast, and I think this is right up your alley.
Yeah, so I'm Jack Madden, and let me just say how happy I am to have everybody here in this room at Bryform. I love Bryform. It's great. And I had a session about virtual mobile infrastructure yesterday morning, and to have this group of people around this table is pretty cool. So thanks so much.
Yeah, this is actually kind of awesome that you all came to Bryform. And since this is episode 207, you know, we've done one with both Justin and Israel and Mike sitting in for Stephanie, who was here for last episode on Remodium. So I'm going to just ask you guys to quick introduction, who you are, what your company is, and we'll go around the table. We'll start with you, Israel.
Hi, I'm Israel Lischitz from Nubo. I found Nubo about 4 years ago.
I'm Mike Ishiru from Remodium. I'm a senior director of product marketing. And Remodium is now in a vast software company, so I have to say that name.
My name is Justin Marston. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Hypori. We started also just over 4 years ago, and we are based in Austin, Texas.
And before I ask the first question, I want to throw it over to Jack, because Jack did a great presentation on VMI, and as he said, there are actually three other vendors who are known in VMI. They're not here. I don't think they're as big, but Jack, if you want to just say who they are.
There's Raytheon, and then there's Trend Micro, and finally a startup called SierraWare.
Okay, so VMI, it's relatively new. Most of you came out of stealth rather recently, last year, year and a half, if I look at all of you. What's the big pull for VMI? We're going to go from left to right. You guys can't see this, but we'll start with Israel, and then we'll go the other way, and then kind of make it a free-for-all. But, you know, what's the big pull for VMI? And then we'll next question, we'll kind of hit what big pull for your product is.
VMI is kind of the ultimate solution for enterprise mobility, mainly because it solves many problems. It's not only focused on security or user experience or connectivity. It solves many problems like the native user experience, very good security, and management of apps and control of the enterprise, and even much more.
Now, to be fair, I let him go first, so it's not going to be completely fair to you guys, sure. But you know, you're all in the same industry, so.
Yeah. So what we think at Remodium is VMI is a perfect solution for people, for companies that need to deploy corporate and personal data on the same device, or if you've got confidential, non-confidential data, that you want to have a very clear delineation of which data goes where and have control over the data and the apps. I think from our perspective, the philosophy is if the data is that secure, it needs to be that secure, don't deliver it out to the device. Keep it in your servers where you have best control over that and let the users access it from wherever they are.
Yeah, so I'd agree with, you know, what both of my friends here have just said. For us, our own story, you know, we got started around a very specific customer need and, you know, in the DoD around classified mobility. So the inspiration came from that, the initial set of requirements came from that, but we have since, you know, we've seen that bring your own device, there's similar kind of requirements, first in the government and then moving into commercial. It's the desire to, you know, run native mobile apps, provide a full mobile experience with an ecosystem of apps, but do it in a way that provides security irrespective of how the apps are behaving. And I think that's probably the, one of the most unique things about VMI is, you know, being able to deliver that native app set of commercial mobile apps experience without having to create very onerous policies or difficulty for the user from a privacy perspective.
Okay, so we're going to start. I'll start with Mike this time because you just finished, Justin. And then I'm going to let Jack ask a question, but throw it out there. Mm-hmm. What's the best feature of your product that makes you stand out from your two competitors here?
Well, from our perspective, what we do is we spend a lot of time working and thinking about scalability. You can scale out to large numbers of devices, and also the IT management aspect of it. How does an IT administrator get great control, visibility, and manageability over the corporate assets? And obviously providing great, you know, UX, which we all do, I'm sure. You're really taking an IT-centric view of VMI.
So I guess the unique things I would say are, number one, we integrate with the MM vendors and we partner with them. So, AirWatch is an example. We're listed on AirWatch's website. We're the only VMI vendor that's done that so far. Then I would say, ability to run our native apps at full speed is something that's unique to us because of the relationship we have with Intel Corporation. And then the third thing that I think these guys will catch up is, we have a bit better support today for sensors. So, we already support video conferencing with the camera, and we have for a while. So there's a few things there, but so I think those are probably some of the differences.
Yes, Nubo, unique differences are first the protocol, the network protocol that we design our own client rendering protocol, which can work nearly on any network condition. It's very important for seamless user experience. In addition, also the control panel is very important, especially because managing of apps is a very large thing in VMI. So it's very easy to add apps, to manage apps. It's everything you manage on the server.
So that's that's really good, I think, to underscore just how different the approaches of all the vendors in this room are, and I think that's probably a sign of a good sign for the industry that there are so many different approaches. But as far as next questions are concerned, there are so many different directions that we could go on this. We could drill down on use cases or technology concerns. This is
I like technology concerns. I have a question for the end, which is the industry big enough for all of you? But let's hold on to that one until we get to the end. But, technology, you and I discuss this all the time. Doesn't work offline. They're Android apps.
Yeah, well, I have this, of course, I have the whole list of questions because I just did the entire session on this yesterday. So where do we even begin? I mean, you'll have to stop me because I have
Throw one out.
So the first one is, Android was designed to run on individual mobile devices that have ARM chips, mobile devices that we carry around with us wherever we go. So putting it on in a data center where most of our hardware is x86, and it's a data center that's very far away from us, that brings different challenges. Running it on server hardware, running multiple users next to each other on the same hardware. So that's processor challenges, scalability challenges.
Security challenges.
We're not even getting into the fact that we have to design a whole remote protocol that's designed to work from a long distance. So where do we want to start?
You pick your question. So
processor, Justin, you mentioned ARM compatibility in there. So let's hear what each one of you are doing as far as that's concerned,
and why it's an advantage for you. I think Justin, it's your turn to start.
So
say which company you are, because we're still at the beginning, so we want people to know that we don't want people thinking Mike's talking about Hyperi or Justin's talking about Nubo. It's not fair for you guys. So at least tell people who they are. Well, don't if you don't want to, but that's your own fault.
So my name is Justin, and again, I'm from Hyperi. Arlan did a study of the top 500 apps in the Play Store. Of those, about a third were written natively in Java, a third were compiled with native code for both Intel and ARM, and a third were compiled just for ARM. And that includes the vast majority of the MDM clients, as an example. So the problem is that all of us are running Android compiled for x86. And so if you make a call that asks an ARM question and it requires an ARM processor call, it isn't going to work if there's no way to run that call. And just out of the box, x86 doesn't support that. And so, there's several ways that you can go. you know, you can either just not support our native applications. That's one option. A second one is that you can try and do some kind of emulation in software. And I think one of us here does that. A third one is that you can do binary instruction translation, which is basically what we do through our relationship with Intel. And then the fourth one is that you can give up running on x86 servers and run on ARM servers. And that's what I believe Sierraware does. So, you know, for ourselves, speaking for a minute, you know, the advantage is, you know, we can run the MDM clients. We do integrate with EMM. We run all of the ARM native applications. We run them at full speed because we're doing binary instruction set translation, not emulation. And, you know, that's it in a nutshell right there. It's being able to do full speed ARM apps running on Intel with Android compiled for x86.
Who wants to jump in? Mike, Israel looks like he's ready.
Yeah, in Nubo, we already also run any ARM app, any native libraries. We use more the emulation approach, but it's running also full speed. And the important part is the seamless user experience. The apps run natively.
Right. So I would echo, I guess,
Remodium.
Mike from Remodium. Sorry about that. Breaking protocol here. But Justin pretty much covered the gamut of approaches that you can take to solve this problem. You know, ARM compatibility is a must. I think that there's just, you know, too many apps out there which don't have Intel APKs available at this point. So we do provide ARM compatibility. We do emulation, use QEMU. That approach has been just fine for us. I think the vast majority of applications that business users want to run are just fine. I mean, if you want to run a game or something like that, maybe it's a little bit more challenging, but I think you've got other challenges when you get down to that level of type of app.
To be fair, if you're running a game, I'm not sure why you're using VMI, but...
Exactly. These issues of app compatibility, it really depends on the customer's approach to VMI and whether they want to put the entire work experience in the VMI bucket and then have to be worried about, okay, we have these commercial apps that we don't have control over, so we need to worry about compatibility for these other apps. Or if VMI is going to be the environment just for certain applications, either that particular applications that have the high security requirements, or that for other reasons we want to run them in the data center right next to the data or something. So the question is, who's looking to run their entire corporate environment for their users or for certain subsets of users in VMI versus which customers are just looking to have one or two apps? And if they're looking at just one or two apps, you know, if it's a situation where they're building these apps specifically on their own and they're building them specifically to be targeted towards a VMI environment, then they can take whatever compatibility issues may be there. They can take those into account in their process of rolling out those applications.
So let me take a point that you just said there, Jack, and ask all of you kind of a yes or no question. Do you have people who are building apps just for VMI infrastructure, either internal or enterprise app developers who've come to you and said, look, we want to run on you, or is it you're just finding the apps that corporations want and helping them get there?
Yes, Israel from Nubo. Probably for after they're choosing VMI, the better choice for them is to just develop the apps for VMI, the next app, because it's reduced radically the cost of developing those apps and, of course, deployment and other things. If they already have apps...
Hang on. How do you reduce the cost of developing an app? Because that is a hugely bold statement.
Yeah.
And I know Jack and I have both brought up calculators in front of people and everything. If you guys were MBAS vendors, if you guys were maybe Meep or MAMP, I might buy into that. How do you reduce the cost of app development if they're developing directly for VMI?
I assume we're talking about native mobile app development. So in VMI, you need to develop it only for one platform. You don't need to develop for Android and iOS and Windows. You also only develop for one platform and also for one version. You don't need to quality test it with each version or if even on Android on each model. So it's dramatically reduce the cost.
Okay, I'll buy into that. If you're doing multi-platform, that can help.
Well, this is Mike again. I would say that today most customers are looking at their specific pain points. So they've got a couple of apps that they want to modify. They want to mobilize through VMI. That's the biggest hook for companies to adopt VMI at this point. Going forward, I think we'll see a lot more people adopt that model and leverage the benefits that Israel was talking about and get more development targeting directly for VMI. But today, I think we're not yet at that stage where VMI's got enough of an installed base that developers are saying, I got to develop for this platform.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'd agree. I think to jump on to Israel's comment, we have an automated test lab with 230 devices on walls, specifically so we can test our client on hundreds of devices so that our customers don't have to. And I think that is attractive. And we've talked to, I'm sure they found the same when we talked to, customer types, the endpoint testing, the fragmentation, particularly of Android, is very painful. I think on the app side, the big attraction is not being locked into a proprietary platform. You know, when you look at having to develop apps for a particular containerization technology, having to use a specific SDK or having to, even if you're wrapping, but certainly if you're using the SDK, does in some ways tie you to that platform. And I think the folks we've spoken to, the ability to take apps they've already written without modification and just drop them on the platform, the ability to take particularly commercial mobile apps. And so a specific example we've seen a lot right now is Microsoft Link. Microsoft has made it difficult to partner with the other EMM companies, partly because, they want to push Intune, and all of them have told us that. All the other EMM companies. And so being able to deliver an application like Link as a secure service from the cloud, especially if that's the one app you're doing it in a seamless kind of a way, is something that we've found customers find really attractive. So we see both. We see, some users who are using this very broadly in a classified mobility or a bring your own device kind of context and buy into it whole scale because of some HIPAA security requirement or government sanitization and cleanup requirement. Others will just pick specific applications that have more sensitive data or particular subsets of users like contractors or partners.
So I'll just make a comment here, and Jack, feel free, but we're still talking Android apps. And when we're talking commercial Android apps, we still see them behind. I mean, look, I'm 4 months out of Sanofi. And, it was very difficult for us to find an enterprise app that was as good on Android as on iOS. And I think when you're talking about user experience, you may have the same experience of having it live and you don't have to update. And, I hadn't thought of those things. I think those are great points. On the other hand, I kind of look at it commercially. Microsoft Link took an extra, 4 months, 6 months to come out on Android versus iOS. And, it's one of those things of, because they're developing for 256 devices or however many. I mean, I don't know. What are you thinking, Jack?
Exactly. So if you're taking a VMI strategy of we're going to have our entire corporate environment or a user's entire environment, including their commercial off-the-shelf apps, in the VMI environment, then, their experience may suffer with some of those commercial off-the-shelf apps. So the other strategy is, of course, to have a very specific planned concerted effort around VMI that it's, hey, VMI is going to be only for these certain applications. We're going to develop applications specifically for VMI. Now, of course, that takes a lot of planning. It's a long time before a company gets to that point that they're going to have that particular strategy, as opposed to just saying, okay, we'll try VMI as our way to just put all our apps together as an alternative to other forms of mobile app management.
So there's a maturity model by the companies, but that leads to a great question to you guys. Are you seeing, if we take out the government and DOD, which, let's be fair, completely buy into VMI. We don't want anything on the device. We're running it on the data center. And no, I'm not going to ask you how secure the data center is. That's their problem, and you can work on that with them. Are you seeing companies that are buying into the whole model, or are they pulling the we got a single app or a couple app?
So I wanted to call bullshit a bit on that last comment first, and then you know, I'll hand the question over. So, you know, I think that last time I checked, you know, Android has 1.5 million apps in the App Store. You have to look at what we're competing against in a thin client model for mobile. So, you know, if you guys can call Tim Cook and convince him to open source iOS, I'll be right there with you. If that's unlikely to happen, then the thin client competitor is Windows. And last time I checked, there weren't that many apps in the Windows sort of touch store. But and then I think my other comment would be that if you look at the apps that are in any of the EMM ecosystems today, the third party apps, it's typically about 50. So that includes all of the, you know, AirWatch, Good, MobileIron. And so, you know, I accept that, yes, on certain apps, people go iOS first, and there is more iOS in the enterprise than there is Android. But there is a significant amount of Android, and it is at, you know, it when we got out 2 years ago, people would say, I've got an iOS-only strategy. And now nobody's saying that that we've met. So that would kind of be, you know, I would push back on that and say there are a lot of great apps written for enterprise for Android. They are improving. And, you know, developers are writing for both iOS and Android today, the vast majority we speak to. So,
you know, I get why you call BS, but you're not competing against thin client. Because we'll get to that question at the end. I don't think you guys actually see each other in accounts yet, because I just think there's so much opportunity out there. You're competing against native. You're competing against native versus, I think, you know, this is not VDI that's been out there forever where, you know, him and his brother Gabe wrote VDI Delusion, did all this stuff. You're competing against native. Yeah. You know, it's, do I have it on my device? It's, you know, I asked all three of you guys in our one-on-ones, you know, what about offline? Those sorts of things. And
right.
Not everybody needs it. But when they do, you guys kind of fall down. So, you know, it's – I get why you call bullshit, but I think you're comparing apples to oranges there.
And even if this is, again, Israel from Noble, if we compare native deployment to VMI deployment, it's totally different. And once company see the benefits of VMI for any new application, they nearly not consider to deploy it natively because there are so many problems. User need to approve policies and they need to deal with so many problems in the device and sometimes they need to wrap the app and it can take lots of time. And then sometimes developers complete an app and then the security team not allow him to deploy it. We see it on our organization. So once they have VMI, they know that they can just develop or install and it's working. Not need any additional approval, any additional solution. So once we organization will do that, they move more and more apps to VMI and probably if they need offline access, they make the extra effort to deploy it in the device. Probably I can see it on email and calendar and contacts, which currently working very well with MDM. So they possibly will do that. It depends on the type of organization because some of them don't like email and contacts because of security, and some less care about online or offline.
So I would comment that I think you're probably right in the sense that people are just now learning about VMI. They're getting their feet wet. They're figuring out how they're going to deploy. In some very regulated cases, I mean, there are people who are very, you know, far along in that path. And but for the large, you know, majority of companies out there, they're just learning about this technology, and many people at Brightform that I'm meeting here are just learning about this for the first time. So I'm personally really happy to see, you know, Israel and Justin and the other three vendors who are not here, you know, just out there promoting VMI, because I think it's a great way for companies to mobilize their corporate assets. Now, getting to, I guess, the question of whether, companies will be whether the apps, you know, are there or not, or whether offline, online, whether that's an issue. I think to me, this kind of reminds me of when I made the first transition from my first Windows smartphone to iOS for the first time, for the very first iPhone. There were a lot of things that, that Apple decided to do on the back end in the cloud because they realized that the network connectivity was becoming ubiquitous. And, you know, the first time I saw it, I thought, well, what if I'm offline? How am I going to get this thing to work? And my app is not going to work. But what I realized is it made the Windows smartphone really clunky and really slow because they were trying to rely on all the resources of that one underpowered CPU to make things happen. It's a little bit different because the mobile devices now are very, you know, high powered. They can do a lot of things. But still, I mean, Apple was, you know, leading the charge on making that transition to relying on a lot of, you know, cloud-based resources. And I think the same thing is true here. You know, there are places where you don't get network connectivity. And there are countries where the infrastructure just doesn't exist to support something like VMI. But by and large, in the most of the companies that you know we'd be going after, the types of organizations that would be using VMI, they're in places where 3G, 4G connectivity, LTE is pretty ubiquitous, and they can get connectivity. You know, I think you mentioned you know on the BART under the water,
yes,
in San Francisco, going from you know. One side of the bay to the other.
To be fair, he's not using Verizon, but that's a whole other story.
So I think that you know the online offline thing is sort of more blown up than it really is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think Jack has said in his sessions a lot, and I'll let him comment on this. But it's you know, it's the, most of the app, a lot of the apps expect network connectivity. Most of the devices have connectivity most of the time. If you go to Korea. You know, South Korea, you know, they have connectivity almost everywhere. The same is kind of true in Japan. So I think that area is coming to us. What I would say is that we have been working with a lot of different groups. And, you know, for an example, we've spoken to two of the big US carriers here in the US that resell a lot of the existing EMM things. And in a BYOD context, I would say that the market is still turbulent. They have said that, you know, none of the solutions they've got today, their customers are happy with. They're not making much money in it. They just don't think any of it works. And they tried a lot of different things.
Well, to be fair, you're talking about carriers making money. And I don't think any of the EMM vendors are there for carriers to make money. And that's their problem.
It's just that their customers tell them they don't like it. But, you know, I think that you're going to see a diversity of technologies in this space. You know, we partner with EMM. We use MDM to manage our virtual mobile device images, just like any other smartphone. You know, VDI doesn't have 100% of the desktop market. It has perhaps 10%, maybe. So, you know, a comment that I would have is none of us as vendors have to get 100% of the use cases in the market to be happy. And we're pretty confident that there's enough of a market.
I think if you had 10%, you'd all be happy. Let's be clear here. 10% is a lot.
Specifically on the sectors. So the DoD, clearly, yes, you know, we have a lot of traction there. We're on, you know, NSA's commercial solutions for classified baseline. We've been working with the government for 3-4 years. They also have this specific concern about data at rest, even on BYOD, because the reality is when you write data to flash storage, you can't delete it. And so all of these remote wipes don't actually work from a, you know, there was a paper that Cambridge University put out on this a few weeks ago where they bought phones, they tested factory reset phones, found about 80% still had passwords and other details in the flash memory. They also tried all the anti-malware vendors for doing remote wipes and none of them were actually effective. So for them, you know, because of that concern about data at rest, that is driving the Army, the Marine Corps, the Navy towards thin client architectures on UNCLASS. And then I think in healthcare too, you know, the HIPAA concern is significant. Having data at rest is a problem. We've heard it from the EMM vendors themselves. And so, you know, that is a market that for us makes a lot of sense. I think that's why Sierraware is pushing hard for healthcare. And then we have found others. We have found in financial services, we have a large customer right now in the credit card industry around point of sale. So we are, you know, we started in the government as a company, but our main market is definitely commercial.
I wanted to roll back the conversation a bit. You were talking all fairly specialized use cases, but rolling back to the more general use cases, I guess the first question is customers that come in, how far along the EMM route have they been? Are they very, very experienced with EMM and they've tried all sorts of mobile app management technologies, or are they just beginning their EMM deployments and considering VMI at the same time they're considering a regular EMM vendor with local native apps?
This is Mike again. I think most of the customers that we talk to are very familiar with EMM. A lot of them actually have existing deployments, and some of them are happy with them and they're looking for, you know, additional capabilities that VMI can provide. Others are looking for alternate solutions just because of the weight of the support that's required from the organization to keep that EMM system going. So you know, there's a wide range of people, but by and large, most of the people that we talk to do have familiarity with the space, and they are very familiar with the solutions.
And it's Israel from Noble. Yeah, for us, we also see many customers that using EMM now for years. Mainly using it for MDM and then satisfying with the MDM how they manage device and allow policies. And this is something that VMI is not into that in MDM. But now when they're trying to deploy more apps, they see the problems, they see issues, and they're looking for other solution for more mobile app management. So this is a large part of the customers. Another part is the more defense oriented, sometimes on finance, where because of security restrictions, they're not using any solution right now.
So you all mentioned security when you talk about your solutions. How do you secure your client app? Because you're only as good as your weak point. And, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to security people, worrying about security, you know, how's all this work? The weak point for you guys, you know, everything's in data center, nobody can attack it, we'll leave that part alone. But how secure is your client? How do you improve that?
We had a VDI session at Bri Forum a few years ago. It was attacking VDI from the endpoint. So we haven't, in another year, maybe next year, we'll or 2 years, we'll have somebody coming in a session like attacking VMI from the endpoint. So very good question, Ryan.
So for ourselves, we have a defense in depth architecture. We have customers who are extremely good at security. If you're incredibly paranoid, the only answer with any technology is to own the endpoint. That's it. And you own the endpoint. You ideally want a hardware root of trust. You ideally want robust attestation. And you lock the device down to be as close to silicon as possible. And we're seeing that, obviously, in the DoD and high security systems. We're also seeing it in the broader Internet of Things market, where the mobile device becomes really a user interface and connection point for peripherals. And so we asked, like in this financial services example that we're working on right now with this customer, you know, their goal is to turn the device as close to silicon as possible. Now, if you don't have, if you're running on a personally owned device and you can't do any of that stuff, there are several advantages comparing to desktop VDI. Firstly, the OS itself, both Android and iOS, are more secure than Windows. There is less viruses on them.
See what you missed was the painful look on Justin's face as he actually had to admit, yes, they are more secure than Windows.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, they have better app isolation as well. So, it's if you're running in Windows, if you infect the core OS, it's trivial to record the home, you know, record the screen, right? You can't just do that. In there's better app isolation within the core OSs of iOS and Android than there is in Windows. That may change in the future, but right now that's a true statement. And then the other comment I would have is, you know, yes, we all probably do some kind of routing check on the device. And, and the MDM vendors do that too. It is possible to trick those if you're an incredibly sophisticated attacker with a lot of patience. But it's generally better to have the apps and the data not running on the local device. And then, you know, what can somebody do on the endpoint from an attack vector? Well, they can try and record the screen. As soon as they start trying to actually use the protocol and go look at new content or do new things, We have a bunch of techniques that we're doing on the server side to detect when that's happening. So, you know, differentiating wrong users, things like that. So this
you're at least Hypori is confident.
Yes.
So Mike from Remonium again, I think the you know, if you do have a problem with viruses on your phones or mobile phones, Avast has got plenty of solutions for that. So I have to put that plug in.
If you're running antivirus on your phone, I got a bridge to sell you.
Well, Avast is a fairly large, we're the largest security company in the world.
I have no problem with that.
230 million endpoints.
I would still say if you're running antivirus on your phone, you're doing something wrong.
Well, for the enterprise case, you know, for what we do is we take architectural decisions in the client development that make it extremely difficult for an attacker to get anything useful out of it. First of all, the streams are all encrypted, fully SSL encrypted. So, you know, it's difficult for an attacker to get access to the actual video stream. So what else can they get? They can get at frame buffers and things like that that are inside the device. But we don't keep those around. You know, once the pixels are displayed on the screen, we dump them. And so there just isn't persistency throughout the client design that make it very difficult for an hacker to actually get at something that's very, you know, useful. You may be able to, take pictures of the device from another device, you know, there's nothing you can do to prevent
that. Nothing you can do to prevent that.
There's nothing you can do about it. But all the architectural decisions that we can take to make it as secure as possible, we do all of those.
Yeah, a few things that I must to mention. It's first that in VMI, the attack surface also on the endpoint, on the mobile device, is much less than all the other solutions. Simply because we store zero data on the device, nothing on the flash, but still there are some threats. And also that VMI, unlike VDI, from the first day, it's developed as a security solution for very security sensitive organization. So all of us deeply design it to be very secure, much more, probably we have less vulnerabilities than VDI. And last things is that I see also lots of opportunity, also the customers, to integrate with MDM. Some of the tools there are really good also to the customers, like want to deploy policies to device, want to have more kind of an inventory on the device. So, and probably many of the customers are already have MDM, so they can continue using that.
I think, so one final comment. Once hardware groups of trust are broadly deployed on mobile devices, and I think that is a matter of time, for the mainstream mobile devices, the better mobile devices. So once they are deployed, then I think this problem will be, it'll be almost infeasible to go after an endpoint attack on mobile devices. If you have a hardware root of trust, you're confident in the boot state, you know that the app isolation is in place, and you know the device isn't rooted, and you can validate that with a high level of assurance, then it's going to be, unbelievably hard for an attacker to go after that.
They'll find an easier way to do it because, look, when I talk security, one of the things I say is, I don't care who you are. There's no such thing as 100% security.
Sure.
And the truth of the matter is, if someone really wants your data, it has nothing to do with your tools or anyone else's tools. If they really want your data, they'll find a way to get it, whether it's social engineering, whether it's attacking the data set. You find ways to do this stuff. But okay, so next question. Let's give you guys a chance to kind of go at each other a little bit. Up to you whether you want to name the vendor, but biggest flag you're hearing from your competitors. Fear, uncertainty, doubt. What are people saying? Why they're better than you, or why you have a problem? They should go with somebody.
And the question is: are the competitors other VMI vendors, or are the competitors
EMM or whatever?
All of EMM itself.
You don't have to be. I told you all. You had to be respectful. You couldn't curse each other out and everything else. You can't call each other out. I have no problem with that.
So I think those are two very different questions.
Answer whichever one you'd like, and then you'll answer the other one.
Okay. So I think I'll take the EMM question first. So we see EMM as a partner. if you look at Citrix systems and VMware systems for VDI, you know, there's a thin client remote access piece, and then they'll use Symantec or Tibly on the CAPI to manage the Windows virtual images. So, yeah, we would say MDM was never really designed as a BYOD technology. It was designed as a cross-platform BlackBerry Enterprise Server. That was its origin. It's really good at doing device management for enterprise-owned devices. So our goal is to move that enterprise-owned device to the cloud. If you look at how people do teleworking from home PCs today, nobody has special containers with email in them, and nobody installed Tibly clients on home PCs to try and lock them down. They all use either Outlook OWA, or they use some VDI technology and give a richer experience with all the apps. And so, you know, we just don't. It is true that everybody competes for dollars, but it's not a straight direct competitor. And we're very grateful to AirWatch for bringing us into customers and having us, we've gone and sold alongside AirWatch.
AirWatch or VMware did not pay for that comment.
Yes, there you go. And we have been specified. So like the Veterans Administration recently put out an RFP that mandated us in a hospital context and mandated integration with AirWatch. So I think in EMM, that would be my answer. I think in terms of the other VMI vendors, you know, we have gone into a couple of bake-offs. We did do one for one large customer in the government against two other VMI vendors, and we were very happy with the results from that and moving forward with the customer.
You won is what you're saying.
Yeah, we won that. But I think, you know, it's good to have other vendors in the space. If you don't have anybody else in the space, analysts don't write about you. They only write about you when there is a market that they can differentiate.
I think you guys push each other. I mean, right. I think that's a fair thing to say, but I know there's FUD out there because I've heard it from all of you. I'm just fear, uncertainty, doubt. When somebody says their product works this way, so they have a security or a performance issue or something else, and you guys say, wait, that's not true. You know, so yeah, it's kind of like you guys at Nubo say, we have the best protocol because we can run in 256. I don't want to call anybody out other than that because I want to let you guys do it. You know, what are you hearing and what do you want to counter and say, look, I've heard others say this, this is the truth.
Well, I say from our perspective, you know, probably the biggest thing that we hear is, you know, startup viability as a concern. And that is off the table now for us. You know, we're not in search of any funding. We've got plenty of it from the corporate parent. So we're building out and scaling out.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess if we're going to, you know, get into our SmackDown, the question would be, you know, the fun thing with acquisitions is, you know, if you're an entrepreneur or a senior executive, when the handcuffs come off, do you quit and start something new? And there are a lot of acquisitions where a large company buys a small one and ultimately they just kind of get lost in the politics of that organization. Now, who knows? I mean, it certainly looks like Avast is trying to invest in building out an enterprise organization, but that is it's something you can see for ourselves. You know, we raised $14 million in an A round. We've raised, at least 5 to 7 times more than any other startup pure play. We have 3 times the employee headcount. We've been going for longer and we have 7 patents filed. I think in terms of the actual technology piece, you know, there is FUD. Like if you know, Sierraware has been pushing comments that, about scalability of using an SE Android container model versus using a VM per user. And
I got to say, I like the fact that you call out the vendor that's not here.
Yeah, there you go.
Can't defend themselves, but we'll give you that.
You guys know, right, from the RDSH versus VDI slugfests over the last decade, sure, you can put more users on a server with a shared operating system than you can with a VM per user. At the same time, we've tested our software to 10,000 users. We'll probably do 100,000 user tests before the end of the year with our partner IBM and SoftLayer. That's one that's currently in plan. So, you know, we're pretty happy with the scalability, and Android's a much smaller OS. You can put a lot more users per server. I've seen some numbers from other VMI vendors that are bullshit. You cannot put that number of users on a server because the video encoding is going to suck the whole CPU. It's not possible. But certainly you can generally put more users on in a in a shared OS model. It's just our customers drove us towards a VM per user because it gives you better security for user isolation.
You guys can either respond or whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
Jack and I are sitting back. We're kind of smiling, going, okay, now it's starting.
Yeah. The main concern we see from customers is first about the performance. It's a new kind of solution. They need to see a proof that it's really working. With our protocols, this is, we make lots of effort on that. It's really working on nearly any network condition. And one concern is that they will try with another vendor that will not deliver in that, and then they pass for the entire VMI. So we want to be the first with them. And another concern that we see is about resources. What we do is more client-based rendering, so we don't need all those expensive rendering on the server. So probably, yeah, it's something that really helps us to sell. And not only because we see them that the resources on the data center are relatively low.
So I guess to add to that,
I gotta say, he's throwing stuff out and neither of you are really biting. Well, which just doesn't make this as much fun, Jack. It just doesn't.
I think that from the resource perspective, companies that are deploying VMI or considering deploying VMI really need to think about their use case and what are they going to be using it for. Now some of us took different approaches and we have more of a shared kernel type of approach, and some of us have more of a vertical stack. But I think that the use case is going to be different for different organizations, and if the model is that people are using a lot of VMI all the time, then maybe one model might work better. If they're hopping on it to get access to a particular database or make a few changes and enter an order, move processing of an order along, then that kind of use case is a lot more sporadic, and being able to get access to it very quickly and then get out with them and minimize the number of resources that are required from IT's perspective to support that use case is important.
See, I think the key about this is to not be religious about the approach. We saw in the desktop virtualization space where one vendor for a long time advocated for VDI and poo-pooed the shared approach until just about a year ago when they came to embrace the shared approach much more. And us on the blogger side, we'd said, you know, hooray, that's what my brother Brian has been advocating and waiting for years. So from our perspective, that would be our.
I think you're right. The market speaks loudly, right? I mean, whatever customers want, whatever makes sense, everyone's going to get driven to more of a common looking solution over time. They will all take different technical trade-offs in our solutions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the question of a shared OS versus a VM per user, most customers have no idea about the question right now, frankly.
it's only us bloggers, analysts,
yes,
people
it's a
who
very detailed question. I mean, and there are always going to be positives and negatives on each side. We were driven a particular way. We did look at both. We were driven a particular way. I think we're the only one, really, of the VMI vendors that gives a VM per user versus using the SE Android model and Docker-like compartments. I think everybody else uses that. And obviously, you could put one user per VM, but we started off saying we're going to have this logical boundary of a virtual mobile device. And that's different than kind of this view, as Sinan, who's the VP of product now at Remotium, said in his speech, they've had more of a focus on delivering applications versus delivering an entire virtual mobile device type experience.
Right.
My other comment on the protocol side would just be, obviously it's bullshit that you can work, VMI can work on any network connection, just like VDI can't work on any network connection. If you're on a 1200 millisecond satellite link with 128 kilobit, you ain't going to be using VDI across that. Now there are more techniques.
You look sad,
that,
right?
What?
Were you excited?
I will not use... I actually have used a satellite phone. I can't say I will not use a satellite phone. I have used one before.
For VDI or for making phone calls?
The latter. I would never use one. So, to be fair, I personally like most of my apps on my device. You know, I'll call bullshit on all of you for a second and just say, it's great that you can do it and respond. You know, sure, you don't need offline, but most native apps are built to have the hiccups of the network. And it's not, even if you're persistent, non-persistent, I'm not going to ask that question. And most native apps are, okay, I'm not connected, but I've already downloaded this stuff. As soon as I come back in, I get this stuff. And they're a little more, the word might be resilient. That doesn't mean that you, that's not saying that your solution's bad. That's not
anything. Resilient to what?
I can keep working, keep doing my stuff and write emails. Now, to be fair, the iOS native email client sucks for that. It'll tell you you have no network connection. But I don't use the iOS native email client. I don't have that problem. I write my emails. I connect. All of a sudden, they all fly out. And, you know.
So to come back to that offline question, because we've skirted around it a couple of times, you know, it is when we go out and talk to folks, the majority of the email of the offline use case today we have found is email. Occasionally, there's a very specific line of business application. You know, a bank gave us the example of people signing up customers in India, and they had 2,000 reps in India. And they were saying, you know, while they're in a place with absolutely no network, and how do I deliver something to that? And the answer is, don't use VMI. You know, you, for that set of 2,000 users in that business process, go write an app, stick it in a container, collect data, and sync when you get home. For the other 300,000 users and the other 3,000 use cases, you know, use our stuff. But for that one use case, sure, it's not a good example. And so we would say that we coexist. I think all of us would probably say this. We would coexist alongside a Good, an AirWatch inbox, a mobile line at work. And those tools can provide you a basic mobility experience when you're offline using, you know, wrapping. And if there's a couple of business apps there that you want to add, they can do that. But when you're online, you can get a full, natural, undiluted mobile user experience with all the apps working together with each other right, the way that Google and iOS and Apple ultimately intended. They didn't intend you to strap a roof rack on the back of an OS and try and do, you know, multi-tenancy in an OS that wasn't designed for it.
I gotta say, so, I like, you know, the fact that the Brit's strapping a roof rack to the back of her car driving on the wrong side of the road. But Israel, I can tell that you want to jump in. So go ahead.
Yes, actually, I don't want to talk again about offline because it's already talked, but another very important thing is user experience. And at Numbo, we started with first thinking about the user experience, about think about the end user, what he expect to see from our device. I know that also Brian talked about that in about how to build a proper application, and this is all about how, in the end user will actually use the corporate apps because they are made for mobile, they are native, they have the great user experience that they expect, as they see now in more consumer apps.
I think you know, to add to that comment on user experience, Brian, you mentioned already, you know, there are mobile apps that are designed to be somewhat resilient or tolerant of you know, network hiccups. That's true, but I think in general, the mobile OS experience, it actually lends itself really well to VMI. The whole idea that everything on the page is there, you just touch it and we, you know, proxy that touch back to the server. There's a lot less of, you know, hunting and pecking and scrolling and things like that that you have to do, in the VDI world. And also in the VMI world, with apps, usually the app vendors have put a lot of thought into optimizing their experience for the small, you know, form factor of the screen. So from what we see, it's actually a really good way. It's a good match for remoting.
So out of curiosity, and I didn't ask any of you this question when we did our individual podcast, but how do companies act to the data cost? Because essentially you're running everything over, you know, you guys have your own protocol, so it can handle better, although my guess is it scales up if the bandwidth is there. I could be wrong. But you're driving data costs.
You have the same data costs if you do VDI.
Yeah, but I'm not comparing you to VDI. You know, it's great that we can say you're similar to VDI.
Sure.
But VDI, first of all, I'm normally plugged into a Wi-Fi network or whatever. There's right. not enough VDI that's truly running on right. LTE or 3G. It's a matter of right now – the user pays the data or the company pays the data. There's this whole thing. Sure. I'm curious. I would think you've done studies on how much data you use compared to native apps when you do this. That's got to be an important question that comes up when you're comparing.
Well, first of all, remember that if you use a native app, you're not getting the security and other benefits that
you're sure.
So, no, I mean, you're not getting the same.
I'm with you there, but I'm looking at it from the perspective of forget the fact that you cost however much you do per user. I'm not going to ask that. You got people can talk to you the online. You all have websites, everything else. But I'm more concerned. I'm a company. And, you know, I give a device to Jack.
Right.
Jack goes out and all Jack's apps are now on VMI, which means every time he uses something for work.
Right.
And he's not on Wi-Fi, either he's paying for it, I'm paying for it, and eventually if he's paying a lot for it, he's going to want me to pay for it. And I'm curious whether you've done that.
So, on that, we can actually help a lot there because, you know, if you've got the cases where we give you good billing and metering capability over what people are actually using their data for business, right? If they're using their personal phones to watch YouTube or something like that, you know, we can separate that data out and understand, well, actually the business use was only
40 megabytes. Data's only going one place.
Right.
I can see Israel's trying to jump in here.
We're still waiting for the actual comparison though from anybody.
Yeah. I will. So let me surprise you. So in Nubo, we already did such a comparison. Customers asked us for such comparison, and we did, for example, an email. And we found out that Nubo consumed less bandwidth than the email. Why? It's basically because now, when Jack phone is turned off, it still consumes data. It's downloading all the email in background, for example. When in VMI, only when you connect, only when you actually reading email, you see that data. Another thing is attachments in email. We don't need to download the entire attachment into your device. We just show the screen that you are viewing now. Unless you are reading the entire file, if you just go to specific pages.
There are definitely savings. I can see that point of view that there are savings from that piece.
So we have specific metrics on this, so I'll get to them. We've run, you know, tests and comparisons. And so we monitored a regular business user using it as a production system over a 4-month period. They had 2,000 connections. They were connected for on average 40 minutes per day, during that period, 50-50 across Wi-Fi and across 4G carrier network. And the actual data that we got back was that they used 800 megabytes of data a month on Wi-Fi and 600 megas of data a month on 4G. And so, you know, 2.4 gigabytes of data across the 4-month period. If you look at the current charging rates of for mobile bandwidth in the US, it's about between $5 and $10 a gigabyte. And so when you actually compute the cost, and we, just similar to Remotium, we measure and instrument the data connectivity, and we know the connections that each user and the amount of data they've used across each network type. So it turns out it's about $5, somewhere between $3 and $5 per user per month for a heavy use knowledge worker. And so that kind of comes to the total cost of ownership. We would see total cost of ownership for knowledge workers at sub $200 and task workers sub $500 on an annual basis. And I think that's, you know, so we when we actually get there and we do the cost infrastructure modeling, we look at the number of servers they need, we look at the performance stuff, the total cost of ownership significantly less than typically the pain and anguish they have in their current systems. So that's the data. I think part of the reason why it's so low is, again, you know, similar to what Nubo was saying on the performance question. I mean, we do a shitload of work to try and minimize the data across the connections. We've hired a lot of people from handset manufacturers. We've hired them who have deep embedded Android skills, and we would see ourselves as a virtual handset manufacturer because we do all kinds of bypass and, you know, other, you know, codec optimizations, all kinds of things to try and make it work well. So making it work, the performance piece will probably end up being the buying kind of differentiator in VMI just as it has in VDI. Citrix did hundreds of performance optimizations over a decade, and that's what, you know, for a long time made them the best. VMware spent a boatload of cash with Teradici trying to catch up to that. And, you know, now I guess they're close. Microsoft's also getting there. But it's when we go and ask people, why did you pick the VDI technology you picked? It's because of the performance side. And we have the advantage that the whole OS and the whole stack is open source, so we can go in and change it. But it's a lot of hard work, and we will be continuing to do it for the next 5 to 10 years. It's an ongoing, incremental, squeezing stuff out process.
So the one thing I'll say about your numbers, I think it's great, because I'm guessing you all do. It sounds like you all do it. You have a case there. What that tells me is the same thing I'll even be talking about in this afternoon session. We're not there yet. When we talk about businesses being mobile, if somebody's using their mobile device 40 minutes a day for business work, and that company thinks that they're really mobile, we got other issues. Now, truthfully, you can move back and forth between devices, but when you truly mobilize somebody, I would certainly expect them to be using a device in a position where they need a device half the day or more, because you're giving them the ability to do that.
No, I think that's bullshit. I'll tell you why that's bullshit. The reason it's bullshit is if you did, your phone battery would die incredibly fast, and people have a different experience with their phone. So one of the things the Citrix guys said
Let me finish for a second.
I'm going to call bullshit on both. And so the reason is that if you look at the Citrix usage numbers, they said that when people have an active session with VDI, and this is in organizations that have a permanent VDI desktop, they could collect the metrics, and they found that people were actually actively doing things for maybe 10 to 15% of the time that they had sessions. So the difference is that with my laptop or my PC, it tends to be on the whole time. Like, sure. I never turn it off. Whereas the phone, the virtual mobile device, is running all the time. In our case, we do notification sync and things, so it's running the whole time. But the user's connection time, you know, I turn the screen off when I'm done. My typical connection time is 2 or 3 minutes. Now, sometimes I'll do something special where I'm, you know, sat, you know, recording a blog session, or I'm, you know, something about
what
that.
What we're doing right now.
And that's a special use case.
Minutes.
But for the typical knowledge worker, I think that, you know, we're seeing that typical connection times are short, and that's true today in enterprise, in devices in general. If I'm playing personal music or something, sure, but the amount of time people spend on these, it's all active. Whenever the screen's on, they're doing something.
I would agree that, and yeah, I want to give you guys a chance, because we should wrap up soon. We've actually passed an hour, and so we aren't the longest podcast yet, and we'll see what happens that I've done. I think part of that's the apps aren't there yet.
True.
And I, you know, and that's why when I say you're not mobile, it's not a knock on you or anybody else. It's the fact that we haven't put the apps there to engage people in the right place. It's, you know, when I talk about mobile, you know, your job isn't a location. It's something you do. And when you start fixing processes so that they're no longer paper processes and they can be done faster, and I would expect that time to double or triple from 40 minutes to a couple. You know, in an 8-hour day, it wouldn't surprise me to see somebody mobile 3 hours.
That's true. Process. But I mean, take the example of a healthcare professional out visiting patients in the field, right? I mean, they're not going to be spending that time with the patient actually on the device all the time, right? They want to spend the time with the patient. You know, they are mobile, they're out in the field, but then when they want to get back to that EHR app and do some charting, they want to get on, chart, get off. You know, that's the kind of model that I think is mobile.
Exactly, yeah. I think more than that, in mobile apps, the better quality of apps is the less time you use it. If you're a Salesforce, if you create an app for a Salesforce that need to send a quote, you want to able to send a quote within a second and then continue with, because probably with mobile device, he will do that after work in his spare time. So you want him to do it very fast and continue with working. Probably when he is on the office and sending a quote, he will do that from his desktop.
So if, I guess, just to jump on that too, I would agree with what you say on this one. I think that enterprise apps are getting there. So if we look at like the BYOD or the corporate mobility progression, right? You had BlackBerry with a few special apps that people like the banks would build. You then had kind of good with email calendar, and we kind of call that fondly the BlackBerry on my iPhone experience. So it's just like the BlackBerry I had from Throwback Thursday in the 90s, and it's just got all the same kind of limitations in terms of what I can do with it. And then we kind of see this, you know, custom apps, people building custom apps and deploying them with app wrapping, but it's still typically small numbers of apps and most of them are home built. I think the next big phase of evolution in enterprise mobility is this ecosystem of commercial mobile apps. And the vendors are writing them. There are hundreds of vendors. I mean, I take a use case, you know, a point in, you know, reference. I looked at Oracle a couple of years ago. They had 10 apps in the Google Play Store. If you look at Oracle today, they have 120 apps in the Google Play Store. Salesforce has really become an enterprise apps vendor specifically targeting mobile for the vast majority of them. They are totally mobile first. So, you know, App Figures came out with some stats on last year that showed that business was the fastest growing category of apps in the iOS App Store and one of the fastest growing in Android.
It's where you make the most money.
Right, and that's where people are spending money.
Giving apps for free and doing ads isn't where you're going to make money these days. So you can make a good enterprise app, you can sell it. I really want to wrap this up within 5 minutes because I know Jack's been looking at his watch, which means I'll probably keep him from talking to somebody. But quick lightning round, so kind of yes or no questions. I'm going to ask the first one, Jack. You got to ask the second one. So you better think of one. Start this show. Is there enough room for all you vendors for the foreseeable future, all you VMI vendors?
Yes, I think VMI will be a huge market.
Yes, for the foreseeable future. I think in the long run, it's going to be a 2-3 horse race, but for right now.
Agreed, yes.
What we didn't get to today so far was Google Mobile Services certification. Are we going to see that in by the end of the year?
For any of
them. maybe that's a question that
I guess that's
that you can't answer
out of our in our control, right?
Can't answer too specifically. Are you optimistic?
Yeah. Are you optimistic? Very. How hard are you working on it?
Very.
Very from Remodium?
Also.
Very. Justin?
Yes.
That's it.
What I like is Justin's got a grin on his face, and I don't think he wants to call somebody out at the moment. You're all Android. What do you think? You see somewhere one of you vendors being bought by Google? Any one of the six in the next couple of years, being that you're all Android? No?
They just bought Agawi, which I guess some of you guys must have seen. But I think that was focused on letting people try out apps, you know, before they buy them. I mean, that was really Agawi's model, similar to Voxel.
Get.io. So,
yeah. Yes. Agawi.io. So, I don't think that they're not in the hand space market. They sold their Motorola division. I'd be surprised.
It's not really relevant for us, I guess, at this point, unless they want a bigger deal.
You got to
afford it. A much bigger deal.
I think it's better for the ecosystem that they will support VMI, but not be a competitor.
So my question is, actually, my question is not a question. It's, let me tell you what I want.
That's Jack. I'm not asking you.
I thought you
were
going to wrap up.
I want to tell you what I want. Go ahead, Jack.
What I want is I want the flexible deployment model so that I can go to my EMM vendor or my mobility vendor and either, you know, from all the same vendor or in partnership, be able to always be able to choose the exact right tool for the right job. This is no question. This is what I want. Make that happen.
Well, I think there is a question there, and I guess Remodium, we already have the answer, so I'm going to look at the two of you, but you can say, I think that at some point we're either going to see a consolidation or some big boys buying you guys.
Well, are you asking I buy it from a single vendor, or are you asking
you guys do
integrate with? Are you asking to partner with, or are you asking that I want a single vendor solution?
Either one.
Right. Again, those are two totally different
convenient
questions.
You've already said you do partner with the EMMs and everything else, but I guess
Trend Micro can sell you a single solution today. Just none of them are best of breed, but
SmackDown.
Somebody not here.
Yeah.
Do you think they're better than AirWatch's MDM?
I will say this. When I talk about the top five, they're not in it. And I've publicly talked about the top five, so I'm fair to say that I haven't seen Trend Micro anywhere. But I guess the question is, you know, you look 2 years down the line, you guys think that you're still six vendors? I mean, you're a wholly owned subsidiary. You know, you guys haven't heard the podcast, but that's what, you know, that's how they're being treated. You know, right now you're six. Do you see you guys being either some consolidation, some, you know, I think you said it's going to get down to two or three in the long run. Is that because big boys are buying you, or?
I think it's incredibly hard. I don't think a lot of startups enter this space and they don't realize how incredibly hard it is to get to an actual product. And I think a couple have done that. And some people have already killed their projects. I mean, NEC tried this in Japan and they gave up and killed it. VMware tried this in their CTO organization. They gave up and killed it. You know, there's a Raytheon tried this. They've already given up and killed it. So I think a few people.
Well, they're
reselling somebody else's solution at this point. But the internal project, you know, is not there. So, you know, so I think that, you know, the bar to get to a minimum, if you look at VDI, it's dominated by two or three massive vendors. If you look at MDM, there's a bazillion vendors that will somehow manage to eke out some kind of existence.
Jack and I have both written separate articles. I mean, I think in 2012 I called for consolidation, and you know, we've started to see that. You know, Zenprise going to Citrix, AirWatch going to VMware, Mass 360 going to IBM, and I think you're seeing other people, although they haven't publicly admitted it, you're seeing other people starting to give up on it the same way you've talked about. I think that that is there'll be a couple of niche players, but
they hit minimum viable product and they got revenue. You know, VMI vendors, some of the VMI vendors never actually got to any meaningful revenue before something happened. Either they ran out of money, they killed the project, or they got bored. And so that's kind of like the, I think a different...
Which doesn't apply to the three of you here, right?
Right.
Say right. Is what you have to say right here. This is a right or no, and your answer better be right.
Right.
You want to
more than that. I think VMware is actually, yes, lots of work, and we worked for that for 4 years and invest lots of money, and we are also willing to continue without, for at least 5-10 years to make it very robust technology. And probably when the other players, for example, the EMM players will want to get into that game, they will probably look for to acquire such technology and not or to license, but not to develop their own.
So just again, we wouldn't say that VMI as a whole, I'm sure Matt wouldn't say this either, you need to wait 5 to 10 years before it's ready. I mean, we have real products now. We have millions in revenue now. We have customers in production now. So, you know, we would say we've hit that minimum viable product and we're moving along. But it's the same as Citrix, right? I mean, it gets better in every release. It's the same in VMware. It gets better in every release. There's a lot more work we can continue to do to improve it.
I think, piggybacking on your comment, there's a lot of engineering work that goes into this just to keep it up to date with the latest, the greatest, you know, where enterprise apps are at, where Android is, where the whole computing ecosystem is. So I think that in the long run, you'll just see the economics kind of, there will be a couple winners at the market fix. And, you know, the guys who have good solutions coming out of the gate are going to be in good position to be there.
Okay. I want to thank you all. I'm going to give Jack the last word before I close it down, but thank you, Israel. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Justin. You guys were a lot nicer to each other than I thought might happen. Jack, let me give you the last word before I close for the day, but thank you guys for, you know, taking the time, and I think you may have officially hit the longest podcast. We're at an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Hey, I have to say that personally, it's great to have, I've known all of you before. It's great to have all of you in the same room talking about this emerging technology. So it's very exciting to be on this very front edge right here. And more generally, I'll say thank you very much for all of you for being here at Briform.
Yeah, you know, first of all, thank you to Briform for all the podcasts that I've been able to do here because you had these wonderful vendors here. Thank you guys for, you know, being pretty candid. I even got you cursing, but you're supposed to curse in British, but that's okay. that's a little bit better. I expected a wanker or something else in there, but okay. Jack, thanks for guest hosting. We'll have to do this again. Always fun to have you on. And, you know, that's it. I think we hit the longest edition. This is episode 7, the VMI Smackdown. And we'll be coming to you next week with our episode 8, 208, with Hop 2. So thanks, everybody.